This is the Oanda Podcast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, where we preview and review all the big business and market stories with Oanda senior market analysts from around the world. And today it is Ed Moyer in New York. Ed, good afternoon from London.
Happy to be here.
Now, let's start with the events in the Suez Canal. An operation to free that giant container ship continues with warnings it could take days or even weeks. The blockage in the canal by this container ship is causing a bit of a traffic jam in the Red Sea, apparently. It's called the Ever Given. It's a mega container, and it is holding up an estimated $9.6 billion worth of goods each day. That's about £400 million an hour in trade along the waterway, which is, of course, a vital passageway between East and West. And this, Ed, has repercussions for trade, and particularly oil, with the price of WTI and Brent continuing to climb.
And it's a fascinating story, especially considering when we first heard of the blockage, and what really surprised markets was that we did not see a significant surge in oil prices. It was somewhat expected this was going to be quickly resolved. And I think the initial moves was that, okay, this is, you know, nothing that is really going to provide a lasting effect onto trade, onto shipments and deliveries of crude and other energy products. But what's unfolding is that we're starting to see that, uh-oh, this is not going to be quickly resolved. There's been, I think, this excessive amount of optimism that is, you know, slowly getting pushed back. And I think right now everyone is kind of focused. We're going to have a high tide over the weekend. And if that does not really provide an opportunity for the ship to be moved, you know, this is possibly going to last weeks. And that is really affecting, I think, how a lot of businesses are behaving. And when we take a look at what the other vessels are doing, the ones that were behind it, they've already reversed course. So I think that there is this belief this could last a lot longer. And what we're seeing is that, you know, the way this is having a tremendous effect for ship operators. You know, prices are going through the roof, and they've, you know, I think these businesses, you know, these operators are now dealing with, you know, if their ships have been stuck part of this logjam, they now have at least another 2 weeks added to their voyage. And, you know, they're spending about $300,000 in fuel, you know, to go from, you know, the Middle East to Europe. And it's adding an extra 6,000 miles to their journey. So I think this is really surprising people that, okay, this is not quickly resolved. And what's complicating things is that the longer this lasts, the big risk, and I think what we're seeing is that there is going to be tremendous amount of caution in dredging this thing out. And I think that the vessel right now, it's currently hung up on bags, and the bow is in Asia, and the stern is in Africa. And what we're going to see is that they're doing everything possible to avoid any sagging stress, because what that could do, in essence, is crack the hull, which would be an oil spill, and then, you know, even worse, potentially crack the vessel in half. So I think you're probably going to see that extreme caution is going to be how this is handled, and I think blockage is I think going to continue to have its impact, and eventually that should provide, I think, a stronger move here for oil prices. And I think when you take a look at these shipping companies like Evergreen, you know, they're the seventh largest container line, and I think the expectations are they're going to go under. I think they're going to be faced with so many lawsuits, and this is a difficult blow to Taiwan. And I think you're going to see that this is going to be a key story that we're going to be talking for weeks.
And when you consider the amount of money, I mentioned $400 million an hour in trade, It's extraordinary, really, that they aren't throwing every single idea at it. I mean, you can put a man on the moon, but you can't dislodge this mega container, which, OK, it's a rather simplistic thing of me to say. But nonetheless, there were some pictures probably selected for the very reason that it looked ridiculous of the efforts that had so far gone into dislodging this ship. It looked pretty paltry. I'm sure they're doing a lot more now. But, you know, where have the forces been to try and get this ship out of the way? Because I'm not sure I think they've been caught out to a certain extent, and they've come rather late to the party. Well, it's not much a party. It's more of a nightmare.
I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens over the weekend. I think it was just reported that, you know, the U.S. is sending the Navy. So they're expected to arrive on Saturday.
One of the reasons they're sending the Navy is to protect some of the other ships, apparently, from pirates.
Yeah, that is another big concern. And I think what we're probably going to see is that you're going to have, I think, these shipping costs are going to remain elevated until this problem is resolved. And I think that, you know, piracy is going to be another big risk that is just going to, I think, inflate costs. And the concern, and I think that a lot of people are now starting to focus on, is that this was supposed to be a one-time effect on inflation. But if this, you know, goes on for weeks, this could really kind of derail that inflationary expectation of, we're expecting to have prices surge over these next couple of months. You add this, things can kind of get really ugly and provide a higher baseline for inflation, which could have somewhat an effect on these tapering thoughts and fears. So I think this is a very key story. It will remain a key story for quite some time now. And I think the sooner this is resolved, the more we could, you know, resume talking about normal market drivers.
Let's hope that high tide helps and this is resolved sooner rather than later, maybe even this weekend. Let's move to a different story. President Joe Biden setting a new goal of 200 million COVID vaccination doses in his first 100 days in office. Now, that is double the target of 100 million jabs he set in December. That was achieved earlier this month before his 60th day in office. So that's an average of 2.5 million doses a day. So that aspect of his presidency has gone very well indeed, hasn't it? And as with the United Kingdom, where we've vaccinated nearly half of our population now, it has a tremendous effect on the economy and the optimism around the domestic economy, even if the rest of the world is lagging behind. When I say the rest of the world, particularly the EU, once again, they haven't covered themselves in glory this week at all. It just runs on and on and on. But back to your side of the pond, and President Biden, he made his first major speech, didn't he, earlier in the week.
Yeah, very much so. And I think you have to take into context, you know, the U.S. was, you know, regardless of doubling his vaccination goal, they were already on that pace. So I think that it is kind of the Biden administration doing a mini victory lap. I think, you know, still remaining conservative in their goal and what they expect to achieve as far as reopening this economy. But I think if you look at the numbers, the percentage of the population over 65 that is vaccinated is now at 71%. I think that really is why there is so much optimism that this country is really going to have a normal summer for most. I think you're going to have this pent-up demand that is really going to provide that strong move for an intense, you know, U.S. consumer consumption here. And I think what we're probably going to see is that this infrastructure spending that he's going to be touting next week, this is going to be the big driver for the markets. It's multi-trillion plan. I mean, it's been talked possibly around $3 trillion. How is he going to pay for it? It's going to have to be with tax increases. I think it's going to be difficult to picture him gaining Republican support here. But I think that he's going to, he has to do everything in his power to exhaust reaching for bipartisan support here. And I think the reason is because the conservative Democrats are requiring that. So I think the U.S. is going to see infrastructure spending. They're going to have something done, I think, later this year. But next week is going to be critical, because if the Biden administration is somehow able to lure some Republican support, the growth expectations for the U.S. could skyrocket. I think you know, politics, you know, it seems like over the last few presidents, it's everyone stuck to party lines. There is an opportunity here, because some of these red states, if they're going to be the primary beneficiaries of this infrastructure spending, you could see that there could be a greater support for some of these initiatives by the Biden administration. So I think next week is going to be very critical to, you know, getting a sense of, you know, how much this next stimulus bill will be. And I think that if the Biden administration is able to get some Republican support, this is going to be just another catalyst here to drive U.S. growth exceptionalism. And if that happens, you know, you're probably going to see the cyclical rotation trade remain very robust, and I think that's going to be very positive for foreign investors.
Okay, it's been a bad week for Bitcoin, Ed, the crypto dropping to around about $50,000, and that drop saw a decline for, what, five straight days, wasn't it? Market sentiment certainly shifting from bullish to bearish. What's going to happen next?
Yeah, I think it was a fascinating week. I mean, most of the headlines were talking about retail trader mania is fading. I think there's been a lot of traders that were also kind of expecting to see this momentum continue. And what happened was we had a historic expiry of derivative contracts that was approaching. And I think $6 billion, really the largest, I think almost by almost $2 billion from what we saw in January, really provided, I think, a moment here for, you know, this move in Bitcoin to really slow down. I think that the momentum, you know, for the most part, it just seemed exhausted. I think earlier in the week we had the Tesla announcement of accepting Bitcoin as payment, and at least for U.S. customers. And I think that you saw that, you know, Elon Musk, he's really heavily all in on Bitcoin. I think, you know, Tesla is, you know, leading the charge as far as corporates, you know, changing their treasuries to not just holding cash. And I think that you're probably going to see that Musk is, you know, he signaled that, you know, they're not going to convert any Bitcoin they receive in payment. So I think investors are trying to see, you know, okay, what other corporations are going to embrace Bitcoin as payment? And right now, no one's really stepped up. So I think that some of that momentum, you know, has been faded. And I think today, you know, Friday is the option expiration of that $6 billion that I think will really, you know, be the true test. I think next week we're going to see, starting over the weekend, because Bitcoin's 24/7, you're going to see, you know, a lot of that retail interest is going to, and if the social media platforms are right, and if the people that are voicing that this is the time to bounce back in, we're going to see, you know, will the retail interest be able to, you know, help stabilize Bitcoin even further? I think that the playbook for many retail traders is they wait for this option expiration to happen, and typically you've seen prices really roar back. I think that that's going to be the expectations for many people. And if it's not, if Bitcoin does not really start to regain its you know, longer term bullish trend, I think you're going to see a lot of people quickly abandon that trade. So I think the volatility is going to remain strongly in place for Bitcoin.
Okay, Ed, we're actually approaching the final few days of this quarter. What is your view on the first quarter of 2021? It's been absolutely fascinating, hasn't it?
There's been so many stories, and I think really the number one that sticks out to me is just the vaccination breakdown. I think it's fascinating to see how well the US and UK have done with their rollouts and how poorly it has gone for emerging markets and the Eurozone. I think that lockdowns, we are seeing two different trends. I think, you know, you have the US and the UK, which are reopening, and Europe, throughout the rest of Europe, though, you're having many lockdowns being extended. There's a lot of pessimism that you're going to see, I think, the market reopen there. For the US, you know, right now we're starting to see cases trend higher, and that was somewhat expected. But because of the vaccine success, the U.S. right now is on a daily basis vaccinating about 1.2% of all adults per day. So I think that the risks of the B.1.17 variant spreading quickly across the country is somewhat limited. I think that any short-term headaches that we have from that, I think there's so much confidence that, the U.S. is going to have a normal summer. And that is really driving this, I think, vacation booking, car rentals. I think that you're going to see that many Americans have the travel bug. I think you're going to see a lot of money spent across most families that have it available, and that should really, I think, keep that optimistic outlook for the U.S. I think for the first half of the year, and eventually Europe will play catch up. But for now, it's been dollar strength. It's been U.S. equities really kind of leading the charge, and that's kind of the first quarter of the year.
Interesting comparison when you think about the optimism of, the US citizens talking about, going away and getting back to normal. Obviously, we're delighted over here the way things have gone, but I don't get that impression that we're ready for normality quite yet. We feel that there's still quite a long way to go. Maybe it's because the US is such an enormous country and certainly protected in a way by your borders. We're so close to the variants which are rife in the EU at the moment. We don't feel quite as comfortable, despite the fact that we've vaccinated nearly half the population.
Very much so. And I think the concern is that, for Europe, one of the, the beautiful pleasures of living in Europe is that you get to travel, visit, many, many families will have different favorite countries to visit. And right now, you're pretty much still going to be isolated. You really can't go travel abroad. In the U.S., a lot of people in the Northeast will go down south. I think that right now the travel and vacation hotspots, they're seeing tremendous demand now. I think bookings are really picking up here. For Europeans, though, you can't go visit France. You can't really go to Italy just yet. And I think that's kind of a little bit disheartening with your reopening success. I think, your neighbors are not doing well. And that's been a drag, and will be a drag until they get things in order.
I've got a holiday booked in a Greek island last week of August, Ed. So I feel pretty confident that's going to happen. Before we let you go, look ahead to the next few days, the last week before the Easter break for many. What stands out for you?
I think we're going to probably see there's two big economic releases. I think for me, China's economic recovery kind of has hit a little bit of a road bump here. And we're going to have the manufacturing PMIs come out on Tuesday. And if we have a really subpar reading, if we kind of go back to contraction, they're expecting a 51.2 reading. But if there's somewhat of a miss, I think that will really kind of derail risk appetite. The other key event, at least on economic data, is the U.S. non-farm payroll report. The economy is starting to look a lot better. You have three states that are fully reopened. I think hiring is supposed to almost double from last month. We're going to see about 600,000 jobs created is the expectation. I think that as long as we start to see travel and hospitality positions starting to come back, I think that will just kind of reinforce the belief that, you know, the U.S. is going to recover most of these COVID lost jobs this year. Separately, you know, I think we have to talk about the oil markets right now. There's two big events. It's going to be Suez Canal all week long. And also we have OPEC Plus. They are going to meet and discuss their production levels for May. I think that the surge in global virus cases, I mean, they have been rising, really kind of is leading most to believe that a raise in output is not likely to happen. I think the consensus is that they're going to keep production steady. But you never know with the Saudis. They might want to surprise markets once again. The little bit of weakness we've saw with oil prices, they might try to just signal a stronger message. And I would not be surprised if they delivered a small cut. That happens on Thursday, and that's going to be a pivotal meeting. And those are kind of the big ones for next week.
Okay, Ed, have a very good weekend. Thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
This is the Oanda Podcast.